Fan Hotline is presented by Sullivan Super Service, Pittsburgh's trusted plumbing and HVAC provider for over 50 years. Donnie Chedrick with you on 93.7 The Fan tonight until 10. We are live at Sports and Social Steel City on the second floor here at Live Casino in Greensburg. Stop out and enjoy a cold Miller Lite. Training camp coverage on The Fan is presented by Smale Kia in Greensburg and brought to you by Miller Lite, Schleideck, and New Flow Men's Health. And hey, by the way, show proof of a training camp ticket and receive happy hour drink pricing where you can get an ice cold Miller Lite draft for only $4. Or try the tailgate package, which includes a nacho platter, 24 boneless wings, and 100 ounces of Miller Lite beer in one of those towers for just $65. On that Fan Hotline right now, to give us a little training camp update is our guy, Jeff Hathorn, sports director, 93.7 The Fan and 93.7thefan.com. Jeff, an earlier practice today, the getting out ahead of the Doppler, as Mike Tomlin likes to say, and the weather a little bit kinder to everybody involved in what was about 95 yesterday, over 100 on the field. A little bit more comfortable today, I take it.
Yeah, although it didn't feel that much less. I mean, it was 78 or something when practice started. It felt like it was in the 90s. The humidity was still huge, and then, you know, we saw temperatures rise on the field, and it didn't take too long within practice as those temperatures escalated at practice today. But, yeah, they were able to get it done. Of course, they moved practice. It didn't end up raining because, you know, that's exactly what happens when you plan for rain.
Were you referring to some of the skirmishes that took place when you said things heated up on the field?
I was. There was a lot of competitiveness on both sides, a little bit at the line of scrimmage, and mind you, they weren't in pads today, but on some of these one-on-one drills, which it's not backs on backers, but when you put defensive backs and wide receivers, the two most talkative groups on a football field on average, and have them go up against each other, generally something's going to happen. But what we saw was between two specific guys that erupted a couple of times, and with Jonnu Smith and Juan Thornhill.
I think a lot of people were getting the popcorn ready for DK Metcalf and Jalen Ramsey. Were they not the main characters in anything yet?
DK was involved in a little something. Chuck Clark was kind of in the middle of that one. But no, it's ironic, strangely enough, because, you know, Ramsey, people have used the James Harrison comp to Ramsey in terms of his demeanor on a football field, but we have not seen that. We've seen him make plays. We just haven't seen him kind of get involved in the pushing and shoving that we've seen through a couple of times first week of camp.
Jeff, in the early going, a little bit over a week now, the Steelers are into training camp. Some of the risers that you are noticing on this roster, some of the winners of camp, I guess we could say, a week in.
Yeah, I would say as a group, it's the defensive backs. That is a group that I think has performed very well, all things considered. It is early for risers. I mean, I'll give it to him because he hasn't done much in camp. Roman Wilson had the catch of the day, went up over Joey Porter to make a catch. It was a spectacular play by Wilson, and you kind of been waiting for Roman to step up, and he knows. Mike Tomlin said it very publicly about how important this camp is for him, and today he was able to go up, you know, and make that play. James Pierre made a couple of plays today. That doesn't mean he's going to start, but he stepped up a couple of times. We haven't noticed it as much on the line. I mean, YA's gotten his hands up a couple of times. We've seen Sawyer be a little disruptive at times. Obviously, tomorrow night is when there's going to be the biggest crowd of camp, and the energy is going to be high, and we'll probably see a couple of these guys really step up. But, I would say this too. Watching the way Aaron Rodgers leads and how, I think Roman Wilson said it well today when he said that, he's the coolest guy he's ever met. He's just got this confidence about him and this way that guys have gravitated to him that's just been fascinating to watch here, not really knowing what to expect with him as the quarterback.
What kind of crowd are they expecting tomorrow out at Latrobe Memorial?
Well, Donnie, just like when you played, a packed house.
I did play there a few times in rec football, you know, and then we scrimmaged there a couple of times. I do like that field, that stadium.
Yeah, it's a cool venue, and I think the drive in, as much as anything. I mean, it's that way with most high school fields. But as you drive in, you go the back roads, and you're going by the houses, and there are people that are kind of guessing what the route might be, and they're out on their porches, and they've got signs, and it's just for these guys that go through all this stuff, and you know, are big time, and are so many millionaires, to kind of see that flavor. I know Tomlin talks about it every year, but I do think there is something to it. You know, to get in a school bus, to ride down the road and pull into a stadium and have all these people, you know, waiting for you, is, and then to ramp it up almost always when you get onto that field. I think that's and that's why they didn't have pads today, because they wanted to make sure they have pads tomorrow night.
And it's also special, too, because you mentioned, like, the drive to the stadium. They're driving through what is a very blue-collar town.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I mean, they're in all due respect to these people, I mean, they all have much more money than I ever will. They're not driving through Fox Chapel here, Jeff, where
no.
all the houses look like the ones the players have. I mean, you're driving through Latrobe and, you know, it just – an area where, you know, like, this might be the only Steelers football some of the folks there get to see.
And not that you would have the narration like on the double-decker bus, but if you did, I'm sure the players can even understand, like, oh, man, that's a closed mill. Or these dudes must have used to, you know, or their parents or grandparents must have walked to the mill from this house. And I think there is, especially, I mean, Aaron Rodgers – he knows hearing about Pittsburgh, but a guy like that from California, he doesn't know what this is. I mean, I know he's been in Green Bay, but this is, I mean, it is cool for them to maybe get an idea of where this mentality comes from and how these guys, to your point, it's really blue collar. And I think they do a tremendous job with the whole thing. It's an awesome event. They've made it not just an awesome event for the fans, but also for these guys. And I believe them when they say this is something they look forward to, not only to get out there, but it breaks up the routine and makes it a little different. And, oh, by the way, it's cooler at night.
Talking to Jeff Hathorn, sports director, 93.7 The Fan and 93.7thefan.com. Jeff, some of the fallers so far in camp, some of the guys on the unfortunate losing end through this first week.
Yeah, I would say, and a lot of this is due to injury. I really want to see him with pads on before I make a final impression of what Broderick Jones is going to look like at left tackle. But because of the injury, we haven't seen it. I mean, we've seen him got beat a couple of times in unpadded work. So what happens when he gets on the field and he's healthy or healthier with pads on? I mean, that's the one to me that's been a talking point for so many of us, because it's such a key position, no matter who your quarterback is, but especially when you have a 41-year-old. You know, I look at the other – I thought that Darnell Washington was having a good camp. Like, he was taking another step of being that guy that can be a downfield threat. Well, just by process of adding Jonnu Smith, like, where does – Darnell find work? And it's not even anything that really he's done, but like, his arrow is down only from the fact of there are more bodies in front of him now. So that's a guy I look. I mean, if you're a middle linebacker and you're not Patrick Queen or Peyton Wilson, you're not getting any reps with the first team. So Cole Holcomb is working his way back from injury. Malik Harrison, Mark Robinson. I mean, there are two inside linebackers, period. And those guys might play every snap, barring injury or extreme heat or fatigue. I mean, that has been – that probably is an arrow up for those guys and an arrow down for anyone behind them. And, but there hasn't been anybody I've looked at and said, damn, they've just been bad, which I guess is a good thing a week into practice.
I had a feeling you were going to go the Broderick Jones route there. I mean, I wouldn't say like level 10 worried, but it's probably getting to like 7 or 8. Although we do know you just don't want to overreact to some things that happen in the preseason and in training camp, but there are a few, you know, seasons now under his belt to where it's, you know, you got to strap it up or that's pretty much it for you.
And I'm sure, yes. And as a quick aside, Donnie, to that point about overreacting, I mean, I'm sure there are people yelling at the radio, oh, Will Howard. It's so hard to evaluate the third quarterback because you're working with guys that are either not going to be in the league or probably on practice squads or maybe barely making a roster and going against the same type of guys. So it's I want to always, with those guys, you know, have a grain of salt. Now, does he look like he understands things? Has he made some good throws? He made a good throw today to Rock Taylor. That's great. But that's why I didn't put him on that list. And back to Jones for a second. He did some individual work. Like his footwork, his punch, like that stuff looked good today. But it just hasn't all clicked. And I need to see him in the preseason. I mean, not to single him out, to put him out there longer than other guys, but, and I really feel like I need to see something from him on that left side, and preferably with Sayamalu, but I can't imagine Sayamalu is going to get a lot of snaps in those three games.
Jeff, I'm glad you brought up Will Howard, because I hopped on with the guys yesterday, and, you know, Pony could not seem to understand the point I was trying to make about him, where, you know, I hope the kid is great. I'm rooting for him as much as I possibly can. I mean, as you obviously are with your Ohio State, you know, tie-in as well. But people just have to understand the guy got taken in round 6. Like, we got to stay on planet Earth. Like, I feel bad for him because the expectations just feel like they are already at an unfair level.
Yeah, listen, it's great that fans flock to a guy, and he has handled himself like a champ. I mean, in every scenario that he's been in, he has said the right things, he's done the right things, he's signing autographs, like all that stuff. He's made a couple of throws, but, man, to evaluate a guy working with the third team is dangerous. And, you know, let him take this redshirt year and learn the NFL. And don't worry about any of the results. And then let's go come back next year and see what it looks like, because who knows what the quarterback situation is going to be next year. I don't know if he's going to be a part of it or not, but he'll have a year under his belt. He'll be getting some more legit reps. And I hope for the Steelers' standpoint that everybody stays healthy, because I really think he could use that time just to kind of soak in the NFL.
What would the goal be if you were Will Howard, that in 2025, it's just I feel, you know, we should be fine with him not taking a snap. That probably means things
yes.
went relatively well.
Yes. I mean, even Ben, the plan wasn't for him to start when he was a rookie. Remember, Charlie got hurt in camp. Then St. Pierre got hurt. And then Maddox goes down. And, I mean, that wasn't – and. Remember, Tomlin wasn't the coach, so for everybody screaming, oh, that's just Tomlin, oh, that was Cowher.
Yep.
But the plan wasn't for him to play right away, and you drafted him as high as you drafted a quarterback in forever. So, yeah, I mean, even for Ben, the thought was, let's give him some time to figure this out. I know there have been quarterbacks that have stepped right in, but most of those guys are, you know, their name has been called by 9 o'clock on Thursday, not at some point on Saturday. So, yeah, I mean, just give him some time. Let's see what he might be able to do and get a get a fair representation of an entire season. And like I said, let's come back next year at camp and see where he's at.
All of that being said, is it pretty clear that he has an inside track to be that third guy instead of Skylar
yes.
Thompson?
No doubt. No doubt. No doubt he'll be the third quarterback.
Isaac Seumalo back today. Jeff, just in his limited action, how has he looked?
Yeah, and I mean, he's a veteran. He knows what he needs to do in these scenarios. And watching him just do some individual work, you know, where you're just punching a pad and going up and down kind of with four guys and working different angles, he looked fine. We don't know what the soft tissue injury was, but there isn't anything where you look at it that's either taped or obvious that he's nursing anything. So I would expect that he would be back. I mean, maybe he goes through some reps tomorrow with the first team, but it doesn't seem like there's anything major with him. And Donnie, one other thing to point out before I forget from today is, and we talked versatility. Josh Smith lined up at tailback and took a pitch during a play.
That's
and then
interesting
he told
wrinkle.
Us after, he said, well, you guys need to look up a box score from 2019 of Titans-Texans.
Yes, he had a carry in that game, and I think it went for, like, long yardage.
57 yards it went. He did not score somehow, but it went 57 yards. And he said, you know, he'll do any of it. And that was an interesting wrinkle to throw out there in front of all the fans and knowing that we could report it. But, yeah, I mean, listen, he's got some speed. I can understand why you might want to do that. And, you know, you throw him back there, you roll a couple of tight ends out there, and that's why, you know, like Roman Wilson making a catch today was so important, because you're thinking about all the different combinations. And, you know, you want Jaylen Warren out there, but how about Darnell getting an opportunity? And then well, Gainwell's done a nice job of running routes. How do you work him into the mix? And, oh, yeah, we've got this rookie Caleb Johnson. And, you know, Calvin Austin is the fastest guy we've got on the team. You're not taking DK off. You're not taking Freiermuth off the field. Like, how are you going to find a rep if you're a receiver? It's great to have all these different options, but for those guys, it's about taking advantage of every situation. And that's going to be cool to watch, you know, during the preseason games. Like, can Roman show something on a field? You know, remember Calvin Austin missed a year, and then he kind of started making a little name for himself. Can Roman Wilson be the Calvin Austin of 3 years ago or 2 years ago and start making a name for himself? And what can Darnell do without when the other tight ends aren't going to be playing a lot in the preseason? What can Connor Hayward show, you know, with his value? And then, of course, there's a special teams aspect of it. I know those games get boring for a lot of us, but there are so many little things you could watch during those games that will impact roster decisions.
Jeff, before we let you go, the top three guys you're looking forward to watching tomorrow night. It could be either side of the ball. Could be a special teamer.
Ooh, how about Caleb Johnson? Because they're probably going to do some kind of back on backers or pass protection drill that he's going to have to make a play. I want to see how Jalen Ramsey handles this energy. Like, he seems to be one of those guys that loves the big moment. So that would be another guy I'm watching. And then third would be the aforementioned Will Howard. Like, if Will Howard goes out there and just has himself a practice, that legend is only going to grow by leaps and bounds.
Jeff Hathorn, check him out, 93.7thefan.com, our sports director here at 93.7 The Fan. Jeff, thank you.
Thanks, Tommy.
There we go. That's Jeff Hathorn. By the way, folks, come out here August 3rd. Check out the car cruise from noon until 5 in the live casino parking lot. Cars, trucks, motorcycles will be accepted. Visit carcruiselive.com. Coming up, we will head back to the Pirates at the deadline, what I think is one of the worst deadlines in the history of Pittsburgh sports. Noah Hiles, he covers the Buccos for the Post-Gazette. He was also on a Zoom call with Ben Cherington a little bit ago. We will hear from Noah coming up next. You can join the conversation at 412-928-9370 on the Fan text line, which is brought to you by Edgar Snyder & Associates, a personal injury law firm where they always say there's never a fee unless we get money for you. Noah Hiles joins us next. We are live at Sports and Social Steel City here at Live Casino in Greensburg on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan. Listen to the Pop and Joe Show every Wednesday to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry. Contests run every Wednesday through Friday at 12 noon at the 93.7thefan.com contesting page. Donnie Chedrick with you here on 93.7 The Fan until 10. It is Thursday here at Sports and Social Steel City at Live Casino, which means 7-7-7 wing night, 7 wings for $7, which started about 90 minutes ago at 7 p.m. I still have some wings here next to me. Phenomenal in the early going, the ones that I've tried so far. The wings are fresh, never frozen, great flavors, and I can attest to that with the ones that I've tried so far. Something that was not great, the Pirates at the trade deadline, and we're going to talk about that right now. This trade talk brought to you by Globe Airport Parking, and we are going to do that with our guy Noah Hiles from the Post-Gazette. Noah, just your full reaction to everything the Pirates did at the trade deadline. If you want to go on a little rant, feel free, whatever you want to do here. Just your thoughts on what Ben Cherington and company did over the last 48-ish hours.
I'll just quote the great Kevin Stallings and say, I wouldn't call it great. I mean, I don't know how else to say it. This whole month, all we were told was that the goal was to improve the offense, to give the team a better shot to compete in 2026. And in return, in the end, they acquired 9 players, 3 of whom are in AAA or going to be reporting to AAA, and 6 who are going to be playing in either high A or low A. I don't understand how anything got better. Oh, and they're also going to be paying $4.7 million for 3 veterans on expiring deals to continue playing for a last-place team when I know for a fact all 3 had some teams interested in them.
Yeah, can we jump to that before we get into the individual trades? I mean, I thought it was a foregone conclusion that Andrew Heaney, Tommy Pham, Isaiah Kiner-Falefa, I thought it was easy. Okay, those guys are gone, expiring deals. The only guy, correct me if I'm wrong, that was on an expiring deal that got dealt was Caleb Ferguson. I mean,
Frazier as well.
Oh, yeah, Frazier, yeah. I mean, that one was a couple weeks ago, which, I mean, hell, that might end up being what looks like the best trade of this entire deadline period. I'm not even kidding. I think it might so far. But why hold on to Heaney, IKF, and Pham?
I can't begin to explain it. We asked Cherington about it. It was weird because I just got done with the Zoom talking to him, and I don't want to misquote him. I'm waiting for all the quotes to be transcribed. But in the question prior, he talked about wanting to move certain guys to open up opportunities for younger players who he thought were going to be a bigger part of the team in 2026. And then I followed that by asking him, okay, so why are you continuing to roster 3 guys who are on expiring contracts? What do they provide? And like, how does that not open up opportunities? But he just said he felt that they were better for the team to hang it, to keep them around. And they didn't get the value that they wanted for any of those players. I mean, he used the example of moving Bailey Falter to create an opening in the starting rotation. And he said they felt that they needed to move at least one starting pitcher. And it's kind of confusing to me that they would move a guy with 3 years of control and better numbers instead of Andrew Heaney, who's on an expiring deal and who's just a worse baseball player right now than Bailey Falter. He didn't have a lot of good answers. He just felt, he said Falter had a higher trade return, so that's why they chose to move him instead of Heaney. But, I mean, I don't think they got the next Shohei Ohtani for Bailey Falter. So, like, I don't understand why they did that. I can't give you a logical answer. That is a foregone conclusion, not only for Pirates. I know that the Pirates are always stellar at the deadline, it seems. and this routine of selling away your one-year contracts is, it's an annual circumstance here in Pittsburgh. But, like, this is something, that's a foregone conclusion anywhere in baseball. I had agents, I had other team employees, they're texting me, asking me, family members of players, what in the world, why did they do that? And I had no answer to give them, Donnie.
I mean, I'm really just confused at him saying, well, we didn't get the value that we wanted. I mean, I'm not going to tell any of you guys who cover the team how to do your jobs, Noah, because I'm not in those settings. But I think a funny but fair rebuttal to that would have been, well, then how do you explain any of the other trades you just made? Because I don't see much of the...
That was his logic, was they traded... Everyone that they traded was for the value that they thought they were appropriate for. And if they got the value offered to them that they felt Mitch Keller was worth, then Mitch Keller would have been traded. They felt David Bednar's value was met, and they traded him for the number 8 prospect in the Yankees organization. Yeah, but they didn't get that value met on Tommy Pham, a guy who since June 22nd has like the 9th highest OPS in baseball and isn't on an expiring deal and has playoff experience. I don't know. I don't know.
I mean, it's really fair, and there were a couple of people that called in the first hour of the show, and it's hard to disagree. Noah, it felt like this was a slap in the face from the front office.
I mean, I don't know if it's a slap in the face. I just think it's more of a continuation of what we've seen from these guys, which is they think they're the only people who think this way in baseball. When other teams are looking at what they're doing and thinking, "What? I don't understand this." I mean, when I go to winter meetings or the All-Star game and people talk to me about the Pirates, people ask me, one of the most frequently asked questions I get is, what are they doing over there? Agents ask me that. And it's days like today where I've just, you just know, it's like those questions are going to continue. Like they believe they made their farm system deeper. They believe they opened up opportunities for players like Jared Triolo and Johan Oviedo to get major league opportunities to be better for 2026. Both of those guys have played multiple years in the majors, by the way. I mean, they have money, more money theoretically to spend. If you include all of the money that's going to go away when the year ends and IKF, Heaney, and Pham go into free agency and what they save from Hayes going away and Bednar, they're going to have like north of $40 million. But there are way more problems to be fixed than $40 million of big league payroll. And I guess moving Mitch Keller makes that $55 million, but, I mean, this is a general manager who hasn't signed a multi-year free agent in Pittsburgh in 6 years. This is a general manager whose highest paid free agent is $10 million, like an annual value, Aroldis Chapman.
Mm-hmm.
And he was a guy I asked, I said, is it fair to assume that you guys are going to be more aggressive in free agency? And he didn't really just give the simple answer of yes. It sounds like this focus is still going to be on trades, on internal development, and third on that list is going to be free agency. That's not me suggesting that they're just going to pocket all the money that they save, but I think a logical explanation for what you do with the money here would to be go all in on an Alex Bregman, if he's available, or a Gino Suarez or something, because you have so much payroll that you could dedicate a big contract to. But it doesn't seem like that's happening. So I don't know.
What happened with the idea of Owen Casey being somebody in a return if Mitch Keller was dangled out there? Like, was that... That now just feels like a pipe dream because
I think they wanted more than an Owen Casey. I think they wanted a hitter equivalent for Mitch Keller, and I think that that's fine. Like, I think Mitch Keller can get you a better player than Owen Casey. I really do. And I'm not the only person who thinks that. I know the Pirates think that. And I'm no problem because Mitch has so many remaining years of control. If you move him in December and you get a big leaguer, not a prospect, not a top 100 prospect, but an actual big leaguer, a guy who you know what you can expect production-wise from, someone who's been an established hitter at this level for 3-4 seasons, that's what Mitch Keller should get you. And if you get that, that's fine. I don't care that it took a couple extra months to get. If they were to get, you know, Jarren Duran, for example. Jarren Duran arriving in November as opposed to now makes no difference in the grand scheme of things because they're not achieving anything as a team in the next couple of months. So I have no problem with that. But it's the other things where it's like, okay, well, Bednar, could you have gotten an Owen Casey for him? Could you have gotten something better for him? And if not, then why did you trade him? Did you get the absolute most for him? Did you get the absolute most for some of these other guys? I don't know. Or could you have gotten more by packaging Bednar and Keller together? I don't know. I mean, there's just a lot of confusion there. So I wouldn't write off the idea of getting something good for Mitch Keller, better than a top 100 prospect. But again, that isn't going to fix everything. The other assets that they needed to move weren't moved properly, in my opinion.
Yeah, the thing that sucks, Noah, and we're talking to Noah Hiles, who covers the Pirates for the Post-Gazette on the heels of the 2025 trade deadline. I think the thing that is tough to sell there, you saying, and I'm not blaming you, I wouldn't rule out getting a good return for Mitch Keller. There's not much faith from anybody who follows or is a fan of this team that they will get a good return for anybody at this rate.
Yeah, I don't know. I mean,
they would have found a way, and I actually say this with pretty strong conviction, I am convinced they would have found a way, if they actually did trade Paul Skenes, they would have screwed it up.
Maybe.
They would have somehow ended up with the team's, like, sixth or seventh prospect and, like, four or five throw-ins, dudes who are 26 years old and are playing in double A ball.
Yeah, I mean, maybe. I don't know. I mean, to me, I think the bigger story here is just, like, nothing happened. I mean, the Greensboro Grasshoppers, Donnie, they're geared up for a deep playoff run. So the South Atlantic League better look out because High A is locked and loaded. But I don't know. I mean, I think that's where, like, the confusion comes on my end because it's like, aside from Bednar, they didn't really get rid of anything of substance, right? Like, I don't think the Hayes move, honestly, I had not a ton of problems with. I don't think you could have gotten more for it.
I did not expect that to be the trade that I was most positive about coming out of this.
I thought it was fine. I was fine. I was like, you know what? You got a top 10 prospect. You got Rogers, who you're able to flip for another prospect, although I thought that probably could have been a better return than what it was. And you got Hayes' money off the books. I know some people will view that as a salary dump. I kind of view it more as you're calling it what it was. This was not the player that you signed up for. And the longer you kept going on with this charade that Ke'Bryan had a chance to be the player they thought he was going to be when he signed that extension, the worse it was going to be for both parties involved. So I thought that was a smart move, cutting ties, and kind of calling a spade a spade. I had no problem with that move. But in every other move, like, I mean, they weren't going to get anything great for, you know, Caleb Ferguson or whoever else. And, I mean, the Bailey Falter thing is just more puzzling because if you moved him, then why did you not move Andrew Heaney? Like, if you had to keep one, why would you not keep the guy who has better numbers and better control? I don't think the return is anything amazing, but I don't think Bailey Falter had a ton of trade value to begin with. It's just more like everything they did was contradictory to what they were planning to do. And I don't know. It's kind of like I said, yeah, they deepened their low level of their farm system. That wasn't the intended goal stated. And for an organization continually criticized for being cheap, looks like they went out of their way to keep the payroll higher for the last 2 months of a season where they're going to finish in last place again. Good for them.
Yet this didn't really do them any favors just because...
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I mean, do you think those guys want to be here still? Do you think IKF and Heaney and Tommy Pham are jumping from joy in their hotel room right now?
If I was any of those three guys, and I would think anybody that was in their position is thinking, oh, this is great. I'm going to get moved to a team that has a chance to make the playoffs, and at minimum, they will play exciting baseball in the final month of the season. I would actually be, like, pissed off if I'm one of those three guys.
I mean, yeah.
That dude, I'm still here.
Tommy Pham played in the ALDS last year in the World Series 2 years ago. Andrew Heaney pitched against Tommy Pham in the World Series 2 years ago. And IKF played playoff ball. He played in big markets. Played in New York, played in Texas, played in Toronto. Those teams are always all in. These guys did not sign up. I mean, they signed a contract, or in IKF's case, he was traded here. They knew what they were getting into. But I think it was very logical that all of them anticipated that they'd be playing for a little bit more than just, hey, let's give the young guys some mentorship so maybe they'll be better in 2026. I think that they thought they had a little bit more to play for than that when they take the field tomorrow.
Why did they seemingly settle on what they did for David Bednar to the Yankees?
Because they think that's the best offer. And I'll be clear with this. You know, prospect lists aren't the end-all be-all. There are a lot of guys who are top 100 prospects who don't pan out. I mean, hell, they're a handful of them on this roster now.
Yep.
But, I mean, I don't know. When you hear them say it with so much confidence, like, we like our package better than some of the top 100 guys that we were looking at. Like, okay, you know, if an organization that had a better track record in trade returns were saying this, I would think, oh, they're going to fleece a team. I don't think that notion applies to this organization.
No, they only get fleeced by teams. I mean, somebody who actually pulled off some pretty good ones. Now, he goes out on a sour note because of the Chris Archer debacle, but I mean, moves that got made by Neil Huntington at deadlines, even at times, mostly when they were sellers, like you saw them end up prospering from those in the long run.
Wait, just their names?
Yeah, I mean, you know, like you think if the Pirates had an asset that was equivalent to Andrew McCutchen in 2018, do you think that they would have got a Brian Reynolds in return this regime?
No.
Right. Like, I don't know. I mean, we could speculate here and there, but I mean, and don't get me wrong. I mean, the last regime wasn't perfect. They had probably more L's than W's. But, I mean, he said with confidence that this was the best. They liked this trade package better than anything else they were offered. And I don't know exactly what they were offered, but I know they're asking prices for two teams that were finalists for Bednar, and those asking prices included top 100 prospects. So I don't know exactly if those offers were met, but in the end, they were asking for a top 100 prospect for this guy, and they settled. They said, didn't settle. The package that they chose was the headliner of it was the number 8 prospect in the Yankee system, who I've heard is going to be outside the top 10. In the Pirate system when the new rankings are updated.
Now, one thing that does look good, we go back to the Hayes trade. I believe MLB already has the Pirates list updated, and they have Stafura, if I'm saying his name correctly, at 7, I think. So, I mean, hey, that and the fact that they were able to then flip Taylor Rogers, which I was hoping they would do, Again, that looks like the best move they made, Noah, and I did not expect to say that Ke'Bryan Hayes would get them the best return in 2025.
Honestly, I had no problem with any of the moves they made, excluding today. Like, I thought the Frazier trade
was fine. Yeah, today sucked.
Yeah, today was bad. From my personal and professional opinion, today was a bad day for their trade activity. And you know what? If whoever they got, you know, what's his name? Let me pull up the list here. If Brian Sanchez or Callan Moss end up hitting the game-winning home run in the AL or the NLCS in a couple of years, then you can happily replay this audio and point out how dumb I am. Won't be the first time someone's done that. But I don't know. Like, half of these prospects they acquired aren't even on a top 50. And the other ones, it seemed rather underwhelming. Everything they did today seemed either underwhelming or very puzzling. The things that they did and the things that they didn't do.
People have also pointed out that Flores is Rule 5 eligible this offseason.
Yeah. Yeah, isn't that funny? I mean, you could have.
They didn't do the research into that one either, I guess.
Well, I mean, maybe they did. Like, I mean, that's fine. Like, who knows what the Rule 5 order is? Another team could have got him. I mean, you don't know if the Yankees were going to roster him. He's in AAA now. Like, he might have been rostered by the Yankees anyway. And I heard good reviews about Flores. Like, I don't anticipate Flores being terrible. But, I mean, you just traded three people for a first baseman in December, and your two catchers are a 1-1 and a 1-2. And then Andy Rodriguez, if he ever gets his elbow healthy, is another top 100 prospect, former top 100 prospect. So where do those pieces fit? Like, who are they giving up on? Who in, I don't know, it seems like a big bank. A lot of eggs in that basket.
I hate to say it, Noah. You sound like a defeated man.
It's not defeated. It's just like, I don't know. I just spent the last month sending thousands of texts, making hundreds of phone calls, talking with people in the Pirates organization, talking with people in other organizations, talking with at least 12 different agents off the top of my head, talking with players, talking with scouts, talking to a whole bunch of people, trying to get an idea of what the heck they were going to do. And I thought I had a pretty clear idea. And because it was reflected by so many different perspectives. And it seems like they just didn't do what they intended. So, okay, cool.
Noah, check out his stuff with the Post-Gazette. He covers the Buccos. Noah, another series this weekend. Thanks for hopping on to recap what was the Pirates 2025 trade deadline. Thanks, buddy.
3 days of Pirates Rockies feels like an appropriate reward for today. Thanks for having me on, Donnie.
There he goes, Noah Hiles from the PG. Follow us on Twitter at 93.7TheFan. That's brought to you by South Hills Kia in Peters Township. Visit them at southhillskia.com. .net. Coming up, Alan Saunders, Steelers reporter from Pittsburgh Sports Now. He will join us for the 9 o'clock hour to recap some of Steelers training camp so far. And speaking of training camp, show proof of a training camp ticket and receive happy hour drink pricing where you can get an ice-cold Miller Lite for only $4. Or try the tailgate package, which includes a nacho platter, 24 boneless wings, and 100-ounce Miller Lite beer towers for just $65, and that is at Sports and Social Steel City at Live Casino, which is where I am sitting right now. Alan Saunders will join me in just a few minutes. Fan weather is brought to you by Myers Law Group, Pittsburgh's choice for affordable legal solutions. Great weather tomorrow, sunny, temps in the low 80s, similar weather out here in Greensburg and in Latrobe. Alan Saunders joins the show next on Sports Radio 93.7 The Fan.